Welcome to Baird's IPO Reboot Series, where executives can learn the ABCs of going public. I'm Tom Shadowell, the director on Baird's Equity Capital Markets Desk based in beautiful Milwaukee, Wisconsin. In today's episode number 8, we'll be talking about the IPO marketing and syndication process. I'm very happy to be joined today by Andrew Onufre from the BlackRock's Capital Markets team. Andrew, do you mind giving a quick intro for the viewers today?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me, Tom. So as you said, I'm Andrew Onufre. I'm a vice president in BlackRock's capital markets group focused on equity and equity-linked transactions across the Americas. I work with the investment teams internally here to source and execute new opportunities relating to the capital markets. So you could think about that as encompassing everything from pre-IPO investing through the IPO and then equity and any equity-related deals thereafter. So follow-ons, block trades, convertible bonds, pipes, you name it. And then prior to my current role, I was on the sell side and the equity syndicate desk within equity capital markets at Deutsche Bank.
And that's kind of both sell side, buy side experience, I think, will provide a pretty interesting light for viewers today, as he's been on kind of both sides of the marketing process as it relates to IPOs and broader equity capital markets work. So maybe as kind of the first starting point, the first phase of investor engagement in an IPO process is typically this confidential testing the waters, or TTW, sometimes you'll hear. Maybe just start by walking us through what that meeting looks like from your standpoint as an investor and what information companies should try to relay during that meeting to you.
Yeah, so testing the waters when the company is on file confidentially and starting to meet with investors is often the first time we're meeting the management team and learning more about the company. Hopefully, we've met them at a conference or a non-deal roadshow, or at least have them on our IPO pipeline backlog, but sometimes it is the first real interaction. The main goal of the meeting is to learn about the company at a high level and understand where it fits within its own ecosystem. One of the big things you try to do is, you know, you look at the company, you look where it fits, and you try to figure out who the comps are and how this company compares. If they're the leader in the market, if they're, you know, second or third tier player, and then figure out how you would value them. You're limited in the financial information that can be shared. So a lot of discussion is high level, and then you can't take any materials with you. So, you know, a couple of things, for instance, is you'll try to get a sense for their growth, their margins, and their competitive edge. Now, one thing that is often overlooked, in my opinion, is that we spend a lot of time really trying to get to know management and how they present themselves, because a big part of the equity underwriting process is trusting management's ability to set goals and execute on those goals. As an investor, you know, you're partnering with them over a multi-year investment period, and you need to know that they can steer the company through both calm times, but also when trouble arises. One other question I really like to ask is, you know, why are you going public? What does it accomplish for you? And why are you doing that now?
Yeah, I think those are really important points, because in addition to just getting the equity story for the business across, this is the first time that the company is going to be publicly traded, and trust has a lot to do with that initial kind of listing period. And so I think it's a great point that management teams should focus not only on just the presentation itself, but how they come across in those meetings, especially now that we're seeing a lot more investor engagement in IPO processes return to this in-person meetings versus some of these Zoom calls that we had over the past couple of years. And so I think moving on, so you're through this testing the water process, everything's going well. At this point, you flip your prospectus filing public, and that kicks off this couple week holding pattern before you can formally launch the deal. Like, Andrew, from your perspective, what sort of work are you doing during that kind of lag between that public filing to get better informed ahead of the actual launch?
Yeah, so when the prospectus flips public, there's a lot of new information, but the key parts of that are more detailed historical financials. So you're going to look to start to build out a model in a company if you've not done so already. You're trying to fill in as many gaps as possible. There are a few key pieces missing, but you should at that point at least have enough to get a sense of historicals and you know, combination of what you know from testing the waters or other information, try to project out to your best ability how the company will look in a few years. Additionally, you'll have a better sense on the timing of the IPO. management in the testing water process. You know, can't say specifically, but once you flip that prospectus public, you know that they could launch in as little as 15 days. So the clock starts to tick, and you know that this could be a near-term actionable event. But really, that 15-day period or more is gearing up to the public launch. You want to be in the best position to act quickly. So it's really just getting yourself familiar and more familiar with the business leading up to that.
Yeah, all great points. And so as we work through the timeline here, you got through the waiting period, the market is kind of sitting there, and it looks like a good window to proceed with launching. And so you hit the go button, you launch your roadshow, embark on the in-person meetings, lunches, Zooms. Maybe walk me through the process, Andrew, from your perspective on your end, when you get that first notification that the deal has launched, and what all goes into the process to kind of finally put an order in the order book. Are you talking to the bank research analysts, the different syndicate desks, your internal teams? What is that process from kind of start the final indication?
Yeah, so the first thing we'll typically see is the prospectus hit the SEC website or Bloomberg, and then you'll get launch notifications from the underwriters. But the first thing I do is I open that prospectus. I see the terms of the deal, the price range, the shares outstanding. I'll make a quick calculation on equity value, enterprise value, and kind of fill in some of those gaps that I couldn't previously. After I've done that, you know, if we think that based on our prior work, this is something that could be interesting, we'll definitely want to set up another meeting with the management team. This meeting will be different in nature from testing the waters, assuming we've met them already. It'll be very Q&A focused, digging deeper on the company strategy, the margin profile, where they want to go, both short, medium, and long term, and what those goals are. Another important factor, if there's been enough time in between the testing the waters meeting and the actual launch of the deal, is we'll figure out how the company has performed in that period versus what management guided us to at our initial meeting. It's kind of the first real test to see if management, to my earlier point, is good at guiding investors on what they want to accomplish and then, you know, accomplishing those goals. In addition to, you know, that initial kind of fundamental work, we'll definitely speak to bank research analysts, get their projections, compare them with ours, try to get a consensus view, and then ask them also on what the, you know, the positives and the pushbacks are. Throughout the book build, I'll be talking to lead bookrunners, trying to get a sense for how it's coming along, you know, how many times they've subscribed to the book, is there price sensitivity, what are people thinking, and we'll use that in combination with our fundamental work to form an opinion and hopefully have an order and a deal. This is the most exciting part of the process, in my opinion. It's where you kind of really have the valuation discovery, and we're able to aggregate a lot of information in one place and make a decision based on it.
Yeah, it's a very interesting process and something that most management teams only get to experience kind of once in their life, taking the company public for the first time. And it really is kind of one of the last places where humans are kind of going phone to phone and essentially putting a valuation and a price on an asset for the first time on a very large scale. I mean, there's probably thousands of people looking at and involved in this kind of price discovery process. So it is a pretty cool experience. And I think usually the market can find itself to kind of the right way, which I think is a good lead-in to our next question I had for you, maybe putting your old syndicate banker hat on here for a minute. I'll chime in here too, but how do we go from collecting all of those indications into an order book and determining that kind of ultimate clearing price?
It's been a little while since I've sat in that seat, but a lot of it happens towards the end of the process. The first few days of book build, like I was saying, a lot of investors are trying to form their view. They're not hitting submit on an order given the limited information they had going into it. You might get some early orders from primarily the hedge fund community who are looking to get a lead in on being in front of the management team and showing some support, but a lot of it happens in the final few days. Investors can take a while to form an opinion and, you know, actually hit submit on that order. And also, you know, we like to retain as much optionality as possible given how markets move. So throughout the book build, if you're on the sell side, the banks, as I said earlier, will be messaging to the street, sharing how it's coming along, guiding investors on where it's heading based on the feedback they've received and the orders in the book. You'll typically close books on an IPO the day before pricing. So you'll close books the day before pricing. You won't accept any new orders. So you'll see what's in front of you. You'll see how many times oversubscribed are you? What's the price sensitivity? Who do you lose at certain price levels? And you'll make a decision based on your preliminary allocations, what the best level is to price the deal. And that's, more of an art than a science, I like to say. It's a balanced decision, and each deal is truly different. So you're going to rely on the specific feedback on that deal and the investors that you've spoken throughout the process to determine the right price. So that night, post-pricing, post-closing the books, you'll price the deal. And the goal, in my opinion, is to set the company up for success in its debut, but also, have enough tension in the supply-demand equation to where you'll have buyers day one and beyond that will be received positively in the market.
Yeah, it really is. It's an interesting process. And you're gathering all these orders from various different people who have different views on the value. I think to your point, this roadshow and collecting the orders and pricing the deal, it all happens in a very condensed amount of time frame. And the key, I think, is building momentum each day of your roadshow into kind of that closing of the order book. And you'll see just in practice, in markets like they are today, which may be a little more tepid, or just kind of the average market, that a lot of those orders are going to come in kind of later in your roadshow process. So I wouldn't be concerned if it's not oversubscribed the first day necessarily, because you have to remember, this is a practical point I don't think many people think about or know, but usually when an investor puts an indication into an IPO order book, they don't retract that indication, say like a few days later. And so there's also just this time lag where people don't necessarily want to put a firm indication in and have to take 5 days of like trading risk, because you never know what could happen in the broader market. And so there is definitely momentum that kind of gets built into the end of the process. And then I think to your point, Andrew, on what's the ultimate clearing price and how do you drive tension? I mean, there's just a lot of factors that go into that. But I think usually the market, the banks, the investors, the company all kind of come to a consensus where typically everyone kind of walks away feeling like it was a well-priced good deal. And I think leading into our next question here, I think you started alluding to it a little bit, but yeah. The company's priced the IPO. It's the next morning and the stock's open to trade. And so I guess the question here is, what all happens that morning when the stock is getting ready to open at the exchange? How do they find that initial kind of trading price? Obviously, you set almost this reference price for the IPO offer price the night before, but now you're going to get the real live trading. I think, and when you think about the investor side of this too, how should we think about any incremental buying and selling that morning? And in your view, I guess, ultimately, what does success look like?
Yeah. So after you release allocations to investors the morning after pricing the IPO, your stabilizing bank, which manages the green shoe, will also manage the matching process to open the stock with the exchange. I've never sat in that seat specifically, but at a high level, they're trying to take buy and sell orders from investors for a period of time until they have enough critical mass to set a specific price where they can open the stock and they can cross those shares. They'll print that trade, which is the opening trade, and then the stock will be open for trading that day. Investors will look at their allocation in the deal versus demand they had and make a decision on if they're happy with what they own, if they want to fill out that position, and if they want to fill out that position, do they do it day one when there's an increased amount of liquidity and it might be easier to do so without moving a stock? Or do you wait until the stock settles and then get into it over time? So that's kind of how you think about it. And each investor approaches this differently. And depending on how the deal's trading, what your cost basis is, your view of the fair value of the asset, that all factors into how you respond on day one and beyond. Success, in my opinion, is very dependent on the deal and importantly, the expectations that the issuer has. I'd say success is generally where the investors are happy with the outcome, but the issuer is also happy with the proceeds raised. So that's a very fine line and one that's often hard to find, but that's what the underwriters are hard to do. And that's the beauty of the process, is trying to find that optimal outcome in each case.
Yeah, I think success in my mind is that there's more buyers than sellers kind of that first day too. You don't want to leave obviously too much money on the table, but you're going public and you want your investors to be happy as well with the outcome, so that they obviously become long-term shareholders of your stock moving forward. And so the kind of points we're making at the initial part of this session, it is absolutely critical to start building a long-term loyal following of investors. And I think that's really does start day one when your stock starts trading for the first time after you price your IPO. And so I wish we had more time, but I think we're on my favorite question of the day for each episode here. And I like to ask the same guest this question. It doesn't have to be limited just to our topic here today. But what are your three most important pieces of advice that you'd give a company that is thinking about going public?
Yes. So three pieces of advice. One, which is easy and I'm sure has been said before, but be conservative. Your first few quarters as a public company will be in focus and it'll set the tone for the months and years thereafter. So definitely be conservative in your guidance and how you position the business. Don't overpromise and underdeliver. The opposite is usually a formula for success. Secondly, think long-term. And when you're making pricing decisions, sizing decisions around the IPO, if there's an opportunity to give a concession to the market or your new shareholders, I think that goes a long way and can pay dividends in the future. Trying to squeeze investors for every dollar day one might leave a sour taste in their mouth if the deal doesn't go as planned. So, thinking about the future, and this is the first step of many going forward, is important. And then third, touch on this very briefly, but be flexible. Markets move around a lot, especially in this environment. If you're set on a specific valuation and you're not willing to go any lower than that, maybe now is not the right time to go, or maybe you should be very careful on when you do launch your IPO. And if you don't care as much about that, or if it's less of a priority and you really just want to be a public company for one reason or another, be flexible with the market and understand that you can't control how it moves. Comps move around, macro factors are out of your control. So sometimes you have to take what the market gives you.
Sage wisdom there from Andrew on you, Frey. So I think we'll end the session there today. Thanks, Andrew, for his time. I'm sure our viewers will find your insights very valuable for years to come if you watch this video. And if you want to get a hold of either Andrew or I, you can find our contact info on either our company websites or drop us a message on LinkedIn. Thank you again to our viewers, and thanks again to Andrew.
Thanks for having me, Tom.